All right, good morning, everybody. Let's open up to Romans 13. As I alluded to first hour, we're going to be getting into the passage a lot more today. And I know we've been on a little bit of a, might seem random at times, but there's a little bit of thought that went into it. A little bit of a circuitous route when it comes to what we've been discussing. And last week we did a message on preference versus conviction and what that means, because the United States Supreme Court has stated that it is only convictions that are protected by the First Amendment. And so now what we're getting into is more into the passage itself and looking at what is the purpose. What is godly government supposed to look like? I mean, we talked about the purpose of government on a general perspective several weeks ago, but now I want to talk more specifically. What is it that God set government up to do, and what does godly government look like? Because Romans 13 deals with that quite in detail, and a few other passages deal with it too, so we'll go into there. Because as I mentioned first hour, if you have someone that's trying to spot a counterfeit. So if you get trained to be able to spot counterfeit currency, you don't really, I mean, you do, but you don't spend your time examining what the counterfeits look like. You spend your time examining what the true thing looks like. And that way you're able to spot the counterfeit really fast. And so if we want to see what godly government looks like, we look at it. But if we want to find out what government that is not functioning properly according to the bounds put by God, we look to see what it's supposed to do, and then we can figure it out. But there are a few caveats there, as you can imagine. So let's start off by reading Romans chapter 13. We'll start in verse 1. He says, "Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid. For it does not bear the sword for nothing, for it is a minister of God, an avenger, who brings forth wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." So Romans, this section of Romans explains what the God-given role of government is. Paul states specifically that it's to the praise of those who do good, and to punish those who do evil. That's a very simple mandate. But like a lot of things in Scripture, even though it might be a simple mandate, the execution of those things can get a little bit squirrely. And see, and here's the reason why. God never gives specific instructions to government. It doesn't say this is what the tax rate's supposed to be. These are the things that are supposed to be punished. This is how much they're supposed to be punished. This is how this is supposed to operate, or that's supposed to operate. These are the levels of government that you're supposed to function, or levels of government you're supposed to have. And here's how each is supposed to function in relationship to each other. Sometimes we wish he would, but he doesn't. And so that might be a little disconcerting for us, because government is given broad principles just like we are. So guess what that means? Just like we have implied authority to execute the principles and how that might look differently, government is to do the same thing. They have implied authority to execute the principles. Now, they are held accountable to the principles, but they have freedom as to how they are to implement those as long as the original principles are being honored. That is how government is supposed to work. We have the same responsibility regardless of the government, though. Obey and submit. Obey and submit. Now, this week, we're going to look at what these verses mean and how they're supposed to operate. As we go forward, we're going to discuss the tendency of government and what it normally does in response to these principles. There is a reason it's called a beast, because it has a tendency to look at the principles and go, nah, I got a better idea. Let's oppress you. That's how typically it operates. Now, let's examine this. Let's examine, my message has two simple points. First off, we're going to talk about the praise of those who do right. Now, notice what it says there. It says in verse 3, rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good and you will have praise from the same. So if we do what is right, we should have nothing to fear. Now, again, a lot of times the tendency is going to be to examine this through history, through reality, and say, well, man, government hasn't done that. No, we're talking ideals. We're talking how it's supposed to function. Now, we might have to stretch really far to find examples of how this goes, of seeing a government that looks at this and says, you know what, I want to honor God and I want to do things the way God says they need to be done in the nation. Now, I bet you have people out there who get into civil service, who look at passages like this and say, you know what, I want to implement the law to where I'm praising those who do good and then I'm punishing those who do bad. Now, even that's a little bit of a squirrely thing, because we have to figure out something, right? We have to figure out what is the definition of good and what is the definition of evil. Because we know from the Old Testament, what's the tendency when it comes to good and evil? Woe to those who call good evil and evil good. So what people like to do, and we see this today quite extensively, people like to monkey with the definitions, don't they? They like to change what the definitions of things actually are. I mean, and we've even gone so far as to change the definition of, you know, basic fundamental realities, where for lack of a better term, we go outside and we say, well, look, the sky's blue. And they say, no, it's not. It's actually purple. It's actually red. It's actually green. It's any other color besides what it actually is. And that's what people are doing these days when it comes to definitions. I can look at you and tell you're one thing, but then you tell me you're something completely different. If we do what's right, we should have nothing to fear. And even in this sense, if we're doing what's right and government decides to persecute, you can still have no fear, because you're being persecuted for doing what's right. But that's for another message a little bit down the road. Now, what are some of the examples of doing what's right in the passages that we're dealing with in government? Well, let's check them out. I'm glad you asked. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. We're just going to hit these really fast because I got a lot to go over today. One of the good things we're supposed to do is out of 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 1. First of all, then, I urge that entreaties and prayers, petitions and thanksgivings be made on behalf of all men, for kings and those who are in authority, so that we may lead a tranquil and quiet life in all godliness and dignity. This is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. So, what are you supposed to do? Pray for them. Be thankful for them. When was the last time we prayed for government? Hopefully it's been recent. Now here's one. It might be a little bit more of a stretch. When was the last time we were thankful? We couldn't do what we do for the gospel if we didn't have some form of government. If we had anarchy, as we talked about a month or so ago, we wouldn't be able to function. Not nearly as well as what we have now. So we can be thankful for that at least, right? Titus chapter 3. This one's fun. Titus chapter 3, verse 1. Now, if you look at the last verse of chapter 2, these things speak and exhort and reprove with all authority. Let no one disregard you. Remind them to be subject to rulers. Oh, that's one of the things that Titus was told to speak and exhort with all authority and let no one disregard him. Remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good deed, to malign no one, to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. Do you see the absolute terminology used there? So what's one of the good things that we're supposed to do in regards to government? Be subject and obey. Okay. How about 1 Peter chapter 2? Verse 13. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13. Submit yourself for the Lord's sake to every human institution. Every human institution, whether to a king or as the one in authority, or as to the one in authority, or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. Notice the terminology here. Be subject to them. And again, he's talking idealistically here, because being subject to the government in doing what? By the praise of those who do good and the punishment of evildoers. Exactly the same thing Romans talks about. Right? Exactly the same thing Romans talks about. So someone could look at this, pull this out of context, and say, I'm only supposed to submit to government when they're functioning the way God tells them to. No. Because we see in other passages that there is no such qualification. And we also see, if you really want to get technical, and I would encourage you to do this, look at the first century church. Look at Jesus Christ himself, the apostles. Look at how they operated in regard to government authorities. They submitted wherever they could, even if they were doing things that were not correct. The only times they rebelled was when they told them to stop doing what God told them to do, which primarily is preaching the word, speaking. And they said, you know, we can't. We can't. As a matter of fact, Paul used his Roman citizenship and the Roman law to thwart what the Jewish leaders were trying to do. He played them against each other. And it led to Paul's execution. But it allowed Paul to go and preach the gospel in Rome, and he actually made disciples of the Praetorian Guard, which were like the Secret Service. They were the elite military that was in charge of guarding Caesar. And he was able to convert people in Caesar's own household. Paul's willing to die for that opportunity. And he used Roman law to get there. So these are great examples for us to kind of pay attention to. Let's head back to Romans 13. Because here's one that's near and dear to my heart. Verse 6. For because of this, you also pay taxes. Okay. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing, render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. That word for custom actually means a toll. It means paying money. So what is doing right, as far as the Christian is concerned? Paying our taxes. Fearing and honoring the government as well. So ideally, though, what is the government? Well, it says there in verse number 3, for rulers are not cause to fear for good behavior, but for evil. You want to have no fear of authority, do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. Primary function of government is to be a minister or a servant for good. And that good is defined by God. It's not what the government defines as good. And again, because God created government, he defines the terms and the parameters by which they are supposed to function. Any step out of those parameters, the people who do that will give an account before God. And this is where the whole personal responsibility thing comes in. It's the actual leaders in government that will give an account of whether or not they followed Romans 13. I would not want to be in a lot of their shoes. Now notice also, when we talk about the taxes, again, back to verse 6. So because of this, you also pay taxes for rulers or servants of God devoting themselves to this very thing. Do you want to know what God states the purpose of taxes are supposed to be? It's supposed to be used in the government's role as being a minister of good and punishment of those who are evildoers. Not for 99% of the stuff that they use it for. So we say, let's not pay taxes then. Well, back to our sermon on the Roman Republic versus Empire. What were the Caesars using the tax money for? Not good stuff. They were using it to build temples for idols and the abominable idolatries that went along with that. They were also using it to build palaces for themselves in all different kinds of places so that they could do all the gross things that they were doing. Most of the emperors were perverts and pedos. And that's what they were using tax money for. And what's Paul say? Pay your taxes. Nowhere in the Bible does it say not to pay your taxes. I know sometimes we wish it did. I don't need much encouragement in that regard. But it says pay your taxes. So that's what we're supposed to do. But again, it doesn't alleviate government's responsibility as to what they're supposed to do with the with the money, right? They're supposed to use it for good. And of course, that doesn't happen a lot of times. And again, a lot of times it's government that's defining what the good is when God already has defined that for us. Okay, let's keep going. In verse 5, if we look at this, this is also another reason why we pay our taxes. Therefore, it's necessary to be in subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. And in 1 Peter 2, he says, so that we can silence the ignorance of foolish men. There are lots of places where we're going to be able to stand. These things are not necessarily where are our hills to die on. You know, let's storm the county courthouse because I'm tired of paying property taxes on my car. Is that the place where we make our final stand? No. Another reason government exists is to praise those who do good. Now, not only is it a minister of good, it's designed to praise those who do good. Now, that doesn't mean that the highway patrol should pull you over to thank you for obeying the law. I'm glad they don't, because that would, you know, probably wouldn't happen to me super often. But, hey, you know your speedometers aren't exactly correct. You know, so, and their radar detectors aren't exactly correct either, so. But government policies should reward law-abiding citizens. It should reward people for doing what they're supposed to be doing, helping you maybe keep more of what you have instead of taking as much as they can. Now, the perfect place, let's go to Deuteronomy 28. The perfect place to see what God means by being a minister for good and praising those who do good is to the government that he set up. Deuteronomy 28. Let's look at verses 1 through 14, and we're just going to go through this fast. Let's look at the things that God praises and the things that he would do. Did God set up, so if this is what God says government's supposed to be, did he set up a government that praised those and rewarded those who did good? Yes. Look at this. Verse 1. Deuteronomy 28, verse 1. Now it shall be, if you diligently obey the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments, which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. All these blessings will come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord your God. Blessed you shall be in the city, blessed shall you be in the country. Blessed shall be the offspring of your body and the produce of the ground and the offspring of your beast and increase of the herd and the young of your flock. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall be you be when you come in, when you go out. The Lord shall cause your enemies who rise up against you to be defeated before you. They will come out against you one way and will flee before you seven ways. The Lord will command the blessings upon you in your bond or in your barns and in all that you put your hand to. And he will bless you in the land the Lord God gives you. The Lord will establish you as a holy people to himself as he swore to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. So all the peoples of the earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they will be afraid of you. The Lord will make you abound in prosperity, and the offspring of your body, and the offspring of your beast, and the produce of the ground, and the land the Lord swore your fathers to give to you. The Lord will open for you his good storehouse, the heavens, to give you rain in your land in its season, to bless all the work of your hand, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. The Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you only will be above, and you will not be underneath, if you listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, which I charge you today to observe them carefully, and do not turn aside from any of the words which I command you today, to the right or to the left, to go after other gods to serve them. That's a lot of blessings. To be specific, they would become higher than the other nations. Their crops and livestock would be blessed. They would have protection against enemies, plentiful harvest. They would be holy and set apart for God. They would be feared by other nations. They would be prosperous and not be in any debt. They would have good weather for crops. They would lend to other nations. And they would, again, finally, they will be above all nations. Does that sound like praise to those who do good? Sure does. Imagine if that was where we are. In a lot of ways, we experienced a lot of those blessings, didn't we? Does our nation borrow money? I saw a meme that says, I find it, maybe one of you shared it, I don't know. I find it really odd or upsetting or something along those lines, that a government that is $34 trillion in debt gives me a credit score. Was that you, Ashley? Oh, Amy Pruden. That's right. Thank you, Amy. She was listening. Thank you, Amy. I appreciate that. How dare they? Credit score. $34 trillion in debt. Billion, trillion, trillion. Yeah, sorry. Because billion's nothing these days. So what's next? That's the praise of doing good. Let's talk really quickly about punishing those who do evil. It is a cause of fear for those who do evil, if we go back to Romans 13. What is that word for fear? It means terror. It is a terror for those who do evil. If you break the law within the context of what we're discussing in Romans 13, please be aware that you should be terrified, and government is directed by God to punish. Let's flip over to 1 Peter chapter 3 quickly. First Peter chapter 3. In verse 17. It says, for it is better if God should will it that you should suffer for doing what is right rather than for doing what is wrong. Now let's flip over to chapter 4, verse 12. And he says, beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing so that the revelation of his glory, you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. Now pay attention. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or a troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he's not to be ashamed, but to glorify God in this name. Look, he's telling Christians. And sometimes Christians run afoul of the law for doing what's bad. If that happens, you should be terrified. Because the law is a minister and an avenger of wrong. Now, a few things to pay attention to. Christ was put to death by the Roman and the Jewish government. So even though he says, you know, and we didn't read it, but verse 13, you know, who's there to harm you, back in chapter 3, who is there to harm you if you do, if you prove zealous for what's good? So Peter's making a claim, you know, government shouldn't harm you if you do what's good. People shouldn't harm you for doing what's good. That's not normal. He says in the very next verse, though, but even if you should, suffer for the sake of righteousness. Not for being a troublesome meddler, an evildoer, or any of those types of things. See, Jesus was put to death by the Roman and Jewish authorities. Did he do anything bad? No. So that lets us know that government was not functioning the way it was supposed to. The Apostle Paul, before he became Paul, was acting as a leader in the Jewish government in persecuting the church, putting them in prison, and putting them to death. That was a Jewish government operation. And if Christianity wasn't true, Saul was doing what was right, according to the law, by the way. The implied meaning is that government doesn't always fulfill its God-given directive. It's supposed to punish those who do evil as defined by God, and he's the one that defines those terms, by the way, right? And then the next thing that I like to bring out is two words, back there in Romans 13. He talks about it in verse 4. He says, for it's a minister of God to you for good. And then in verse 5, it says, but if you do what is evil, be afraid. It does not bear the sword for nothing, for it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. So the first word there for minister, like I mentioned before, it's the word diakonos, which is where we get our word deacon or servant from. It means they have a stewardship given to them by God. And in this particular case, the stewardship is to punish those who do wickedly. They owe a debt to God to discharge their duty as he would direct, as they will give an account. So the government officials should consult God's word to see the principles he places on them. It is this simple praise, it's simple. They need to praise those who serve and punish those who do badly. They're also there to avenge the innocent that were hurt. And that brings us to the next word, avenger. That word literally means to take justice from somebody. In other words, there's a debt of justice, and their job is to exact it from somebody. Someone who is innocent was hurt, and the government is to exact the justice from the other individual. It means to execute a just judgment. And what does God give the government to do that? A sword. A sword. Now, a sword is not for opening letters or cutting vegetables like rutabagas, as we heard earlier. You might cut something off if you try to use a sword for that. This word for sword, it's the generic word for sword used in the New Testament, but it's the Roman sword used for executing justice. It's not the one they necessarily use in battle. God could have used a bunch of other words here, but he chose sword. In other words, the government is God's servant to enforce righteous standards in a society, without which the society breaks down and the church can't move forward. Now, let's look at some examples real quick, and I'm going to finish up very fast here. I thought it was interesting the types of punishments in the Old Testament that God did not use. One is torture. Now, he did permit people to be flogged, but only 39 times. I know it seems like a lot, but the Romans had no limitation. They used a different type of instrument as well, that a lot of times brought about death as a result of just the scourging. Paul was scourged 5 times that way. And he's still running around, or he was still running around. The other one that I find exceedingly interesting was incarceration. The Old Covenant did not use incarceration. The first person to do that was Ahab, actually, in the Northern Kingdom, and he locked up the prophets. Now, I could talk a lot about incarceration. I think incarceration, for the most part, is a horrible form of punishment. Because if you look at the consequences of most of this of the punishments in the Old Testament, they were designed to bring somebody back into being a productive member of society. And we, you know, I'll just mention this. The whole for-profit privatization of prisons is a horrible thing. For someone to profit off of someone being incarcerated, does that sound like a conflict of interest to anybody else? And the fact that judges are lobbied by private prisons, that is not right. That is not right. If we're going to have incarceration, there should be no incentive for anybody to profit, but for people to get people rehabilitated and out. Here's what the Old Testament did do. There was restitution and fines. You took something from somebody and you couldn't pay it back, you worked for them until it was paid back. Now, the longest you could work for them is 7 years. After 7 years, you were set free. And whatever debt you have left was gone. All debts were gone every 7 years. It's a beautiful system. Flogging, we already mentioned that one. Sometimes a good beating will help get somebody on the straight and narrow. Works for kids, and sometimes it works for adults. And then lastly, there were certain situations where someone was executed. I've always found it interesting that there are people who call themselves Christians that are for abortion and against the death penalty, when it should be the exact opposite. See, God set up the government, and we'll end here. God set up the government to bear the sword. And it's a good thing, but they have a responsibility to bear the sword properly. And a lot of times, it has not. And I'm talking government in whole. We can look even in our own country, and we can look in all other kinds of ways where the government has not executed its responsibility properly to punish evildoers. Sometimes it punishes things that it should not have any business punishing, and other times it doesn't punish the things that it should punish. But that's for the next message, because we're going to be getting into, eventually, in a few more weeks, we're going to get into the whole concept of how government has a tendency to not fulfill what God just stated it's supposed to fulfill. And so now that we see how government is supposed to work according to the New Testament, it's much easier to see, even looking at our own country, when it goes out of whack. And the nice thing is when we look at the American system, we have all kinds of remedies that we need to utilize, that we can utilize, to try to help steer that ship back to where it's supposed to go. But then we can have a debate as to whether or not we have a population that'll actually do that. So, all right, we'll stop there today.